Good evening, friends of the Bulkley Valley and beyond. My name is Thomas Tom Roper, and you are listening to CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. My program, On the Ropes, is broadcasting from the Cassia Territory of the Gidimdum Clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en. We've got a very special program tonight for you. I've had a chance to catch up with I guess you could call him world-famous ukulele player. And he's come to Smithers to do a workshop. And we have Alan Cormier is our local ukulele instructor, and he's encouraged Jim to come to Smithers, and we're very happy to have that situation. So we've put together a program. We pre-recorded, because Jim had to take off yesterday and head back to Detroit, Michigan. So I'm going to open up the show with the recorded session, and we'll take it from there. Let's see how it's going here. So we'll see if we can start that up. Okay, so my name is Thomas Tom Roper, and I am on the radio station CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. We are in the Cassia territory, the Gidimdum clan of the Wet'suwet'en people. Today, we have a special guest all the way from Detroit, Michigan. And my friend Alan Cormier, the ukulele instructor in Smithers, has met Jim at Sorrento, and they have become friends. So what we're going to do, I'd like to introduce you to Jim. And Jim, can you just give me a little bit of a welcoming statement?
And not at this time.
Okay. Well.
All right, I will.
Oh, you're a good guy.
If I have to.
Yeah.
Oh, is this the way it's going to go?
Well, we could be a little
question-answer.
It can be. It can be any way we like to run.
All right, I'll go ahead with the first one. I'm Jim DeVille, a contributing editor to Ukulele Magazine, and I've been writing with them for 8 years. And I took up the ukulele in 2000, 24 years ago, after spending 10 years on the five-string banjo and becoming a frustrated five-string banjo player because I'd memorized everything that I played. And if I forgot where I was, well, that was it. I wasn't a musician. I was someone that just regurgitated music. And so once I got the ukulele, it opened up a whole world of chord progressions and scales and music theory, and led me to a place where I wanted to learn music by ear. And then as that progressed, I began teaching others to do that. And for the last 15 years, I've been full-time on the road, traveling throughout the world, teaching play ukulele by ear.
Well, that sounds very interesting, Jim. Just stepping back a little bit in time, and I actually met you several years ago at the ukulele festival in Sorrento, B.C., that was put on by the Kamloops Ukulele Orchestra. And you were part of the instructor group that was brought in from around North America. How long have you been attending that festival, Jim?
Let's see, they started about 8 years ago. I was taking into account that 1 year we skipped for the COVID, or maybe two, I'm not sure. But when they started it, they had it in Kamloops, and it was a very small affair. I think we had about 100 people there. And we had two instructors, Mark and Jane from Australia, and me. And it was fabulous. And so they continued to want to go forward. And they did. And every year, they moved it up to Sorrento, to the retreat there on the Shuswap Lake. And it's been fabulous, and I've been there every year except for one. 2 years ago, last year I skipped. This year I was there, but last year I skipped. I had another camp because I was living in the east in Detroit, and I went to Tennessee for a camp. But I just love coming up here because I've sort of been instrumental in helping them choose the instructors year after year. And it's just such a great group, and it's a well-run festival. They have a committee that takes care of everything, and it really is one of the best festivals in the world that I've been to.
Wow. Wow, that sounds awesome, Jim. So just expanding a little bit on your own personal story, Jim, I just wanted to wonder, where were you born, and then a little stretch into how you got into music and why you would choose the ukulele.
You know, it's funny. I know the answers to all these questions. It's almost like I cheated and got them in advance.
Yeah.
I was born in a small logging and fishing community. Well, that's going back a little bit. Fort Bragg, California, which is on the far northern California coast, about 175 miles north of San Francisco. And it's true, it was a logging and fishing community, salmon fishing and redwood logging. But of course, nowadays, you know, the mill's gone and the trees been pretty much decimated up there. So, and the fishing's down. So it's turned into more of a tourist attraction now. And there, it's an isolated place, kind of isolated. So when I graduated from high school, I went in the U.S. Air Force for 4 years, and then I went to college, and I wanted to be in radio. That was my lifelong dream, was to be on the radio and be a disc jockey, because I always loved music. And so I accomplished that. I was a speech major and broadcast major at College of Marin in Marin County, just north of San Francisco, and then San Francisco State. And then I began my radio career in the early 80s. And I did music up until about 10 years. But I knew nothing about music. I mean, I would sit there on the overnight shifts and I'd watch the records, those vinyl discs that we used to use.
Right.
They'd be spinning around there, and I'd go, man, how do musicians know how to create music? And I had no idea. I didn't know one note from another. And that's the way it went. I mean, I at one time, I made attempts to try and learn music. Like, I took a music class at the San Francisco Community Music School, and I didn't even realize you had to have an instrument. So I was like taking this class and filling in all the answers in the book, but I didn't have an instrument. So obviously I learned nothing about music there. And then in the early 90s, someone gave me a 5-string banjo, and friends in the listening audience, never do that to someone. Give them a 5-string banjo when they know nothing about music. It really, it can have detrimental effects. Since I knew nothing about music, all I did was get a book and start to memorize tablature, written music. That's what I thought people did.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it by ear. And after 10 years, because I'm sort of an intense guy. I mean, when I take on something, I want to do it right.
Right.
And I wanted desperately to be a musician. And I learned a lot of music theory when I was studying the banjo, but I also memorized a lot of tablature. And so when it came to playing things, I could start, but if I got lost, it was over. I didn't know how to find myself in a chord progression, and it was very frustrating to where I wanted to really give it up.
Mm-hmm.
Until I got a ukulele in 2000. Someone gave me a ukulele, and I thought, well, I'm a banjo player. But after a while, I just started studying different chord. You know, feeling where they were. Whoa, that wasn't right. Wow, they're going to find this. And suddenly, songs opened up to me. And I understood where songs, because of my theory background, where songs live, not thongs. Those weren't around yet.
No, that's right.
Songs lived. And it just sparked something in me that I knew that the path forward was not memorizing music anymore off the written page. It was studying chord progressions, which led me to the emotional value of chords, which is the current workshop that I teach all over the place, taking the 7 diatonic chords, those are the chords of a major scale, and how musicians use those chords and the emotion found on each one of those chords to actually manipulate us to certain emotions, make us happy, make us sad, make us want to dance. That's what I wanted to know, and And that's what excites me now, and that's where my passion is.
Right. That's so interesting, Jim. And, you know, myself, my experience, I learned the piano, and so I, of course, learned scales and notes and sort of followed the same progression as you. And in my ukulele world, I've continued that. I have to have sheet music. I can't work without knowing exactly where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And so this idea that you have of running without paper is a phenomenal plan. It's just, I haven't been able to open up to it yet. Is it? Pardon me?
Wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. So Jim, carrying on with a little bit more information, I just wanted to know a little bit of how you met Alan. And through Alan, how did you make a decision to come to the Bulkley Valley? That's sort of one of my standard questions, because we're kind of off the beaten track. We're sort of out in the middle of nowhere. And if you take my brother, when he went for music, went to LA, he's got 10 million people. I went to Smithers. I've got 5,000 people. And we're just two different people living in that sphere. So did Alan influence you, Jim, would you say?
Alan has changed my life. And I'm not pulling your leg.
I know. It's
because I'm sort of a philosophical guy. And I pay attention to the signs. And when I met Alan 7 years ago, it was my first time teaching at the Kamloops Ukulele Festival. And I was so impressed, since there were so few of us, you know, 75 to 100 people. And Alan was the only one that like made a, 12 or 15 hour drive down to Kamloops to attend this festival. And I was just completely impressed by that Alan, and because I didn't know where the hell Smithers was. I thought, you know, it's like in California where I grew up, if it's north of San Francisco, they don't think it exists.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We're up in the hinterlands of Northern California, and it's like, oh, we don't even give the weather up. They don't have weather up there, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So to know that someone had made the effort to come all that way to attend this festival, and we just started calling him Alan from Smithers.
Yeah.
It wasn't just Alan anymore. He was the only one at the festival that had a locator attached to it. It's like, you know, when you were a kid and you were boarding the bus and you had a name tag, Alan Smithers.
Yeah. It's a perfect setup, Alan.
And so we just kept calling him that. And because of where he had come from, and because I didn't know where he lived or anything about the upper interior of BC, I'd only been to Vancouver, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Never been, I think I'd been to Victoria once or twice too, but never further up. And so we started a joke. Well, you know, you got to come to Smithers, Jim. And I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know, when hell freezes over, I'll come to Smithers.
Yeah.
And so every year it was the same thing. Oh, there's Alan from Smithers. Are you coming up to Smithers? No, I'm not going up to Smithers. No, it's too far up. And then this last festival in June, which was 7 years since I'd met Alan, and I made the correlation. Oh, it's been 7 years, seven notes in a major scale.
There's a correlation, right?
Yeah,
there.
And I said, Alan didn't know it, because we were having lunch and I was with Ingrid and Cheryl from Terrace. We were talking and about me coming up there too, at, you know, maybe in a year or so. And Alan was out getting his lunch, and so we appointed him in absentia as the Bring Jim DeVille to Smithers committee.
Right.
And so when he got back to the table, we informed him of that decision, and he said, well, okay. And then later in the camp, I met someone who offered to bring me to Victoria, and I was like, well, I've never done a workshop there. And it just turned out that this woman wanted to bring me there like in September, which was only like 3 months away. And so I talked to Alan and Ingrid, and it just, all the cosmic tumblers came into place.
Right.
And I ended up booking 4 workshops on Vancouver Island, which I'm doing the week this airs will be the week that I'm out there. And then Alan and Ingrid set me up in Smithers, a workshop, all-day workshop, and then Terrace. And so when I flew in here last week, and I saw the complete beauty of this place. I've never been in a place, I've been all over the world,
yeah.
And this is one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. And we went up to Terrace the other day, and following the Skeena River up there, and the mountains, and the native history,
yeah.
You feel it here.
Yeah.
And so I'm not pulling your leg, that me coming here really has changed my perspective on this area, but also next year I've already been hired to go to Sorrento again. I'm going to come back to this area and then continue to explore and actually stay up here a few months. It's like my new adopted homeland.
Right.
So it really did, meeting Alan changed everything for me about coming up here and the whole music scene and just the people, the art scene.
Right.
Here. It's just fabulous.
Yeah. No, that sounds very interesting, Jim. Well, listen, I would like us to play a song. But before that, I'll just want to introduce Alan so you know that you're on the radio show, Alan. So Alan Cormier has been in Smithers. I think you were born here, were you?
No, I was born in Montreal.
Okay.
I moved here when I was 12.
Right.
In 1971.
Ah.
My father worked for CN and transferred out west at that time.
Right on. That sounds very good. And then you ended up in...
that's like 3 years ago or so.
It feels like it. Yeah, exactly.
Like 52 years ago, yeah.
It's amazing, really, how time goes by.
Yeah.
But Alan, you were not, I just want to sort of explain that you were not a ukulele player. You were a guitar player. You were a singer.
Yeah, I played guitar.
You were into music.
Yeah, I always liked music.
Yeah.
But my only study was with guitar, was mostly by ear, watching other people play.
Mm-hmm.
With the ukulele is when I found that I could actually learn music theory, how to play songs, and I think my background of playing by ear on the guitar made me connect with Jim because it made sense to me.
Right. No, it sounds like a very important route to go. So could the two of you play as a little ditty? Do you have a song that you'd like to...
Oh yeah, and I'll add one thing more about Alan and mine's relationship, even though we've only seen each other once a year, you know, for like six times,
right.
for a weekend retreat, there's a bond there because of that, of what I brought about the by ear, but also his desire to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That was the bond. And when you meet people like that, it's an immediate friendship that it passes time. It's like, I could not see Alan for 12 months, but when I see him, it's like, hey Alan, you know, same thing. So, but this trip up to the Valley and to Smithers has been completely different because I've been here for like 4 days or 5 days now, and I'm staying at Alan's house. We've had a chance to actually finally play together, and it's just been fabulous. So what we're gonna play here is a tune that I wrote a number of years ago, called The Waltz of the Sunflowers, and I'm going to ask Alan to help me out on guitar on this. Alan, will you help me out on guitar?
I'll help
on this?
You out on guitar.
See, I said I was going to ask you.
I think it's a 1-4-5 something or other.
Yeah, that's what it is, and it's in waltz time too, remember?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Here we go, Alan, let's waltz through this one. 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3. Okay, Alan, I thought I told you. Actually, Tom, we did that on purpose to show the audience, the listening audience,
yes,
that it doesn't matter if you make mistakes because you can immediately fire the accompanist,
yes,
and find someone else.
Exactly. You know. There's always a guitar player.
1-4-5, Alex. 1-4-5.
Yeah, I got
it now.
Yeah. We'll see. Okay.
Me playing music is fun. 1, 2, 3, 2, 2, 3. Thank you.
lovely. That was lovely. And I could just feel the sunflowers bursting out happy.
You know, that's the one thing about music and writing music and not being tied to the paper is I was actually living east of Portland, Oregon, right at the beginning of the Columbia Gorge, and I was living on a 15-acre tract of land in an old restored barn, and they had a plot, a couple area plot that they would, one year would be raspberries and one year sunflowers, and the year that it was sunflowers, you know, you're out there on an August afternoon in the near the Columbia Gorge, and the, you know, it's a, you know, as beautiful as here, where the wind is just lightly blowing these in waltz time, these sunflower heads.
Yeah.
And you're right.
Yeah.
And it just conjures up, conjures up the melody, and that's the beauty of writing your own music too, is when you play it, it puts you right immediately back there, mm-hmm. and seeing it. It's a lovely thing.
It's like a photograph.
Oh yeah, it's an audio photograph. It really is.
Exactly. So a couple more questions, Jim, as we're carrying along here. The one thing I was wondering about was how did it go in Terrace?
It was one of the most magical days of my career, and I'm not pulling anyone's leg here.
It's a magical place.
Oh.
The river, like people move there just to be around that river.
Oh.
It's amazing.
I heard a lot of stories like that yesterday. And I've been doing this, like I said, for 15 years. I've done hundreds and hundreds of these workshops in the States, in Canada, in Australia, in Scotland. And yesterday, when we did this all-day event for about 30 people, the room was magic because of the people that were there.
Mm-hmm.
And this workshop, The Emotional Value of Chords, it's not like a regular workshop music order where put your fingers here, play this, here's a handout.
Mm-hmm.
No, this is showing people the emotional value of what makes songs make you cry and make you happy. And it changes people.
Yeah.
It really changes how they listen to music. And yesterday was special, because of the content, sure, and how people embraced it. But also, one of the things that really affected me was at the end, a couple of people drove all the way from Prince Rupert to come to the workshop. It was a young woman and her partner, middle-aged maybe, 40-ish, and that's young for us. Young for us.
Yeah.
But he was a native Prince Rupert, and he came up to me and was just like, we're starting something out there, and we'd like you to come out there and help us start something too. And
wow.
But the music and that attachment to the music also fed into his knowledge of where he lives and mm-hmm. his attachment to the land, which he told me he had not really embraced up to that point in his life. And so it was just a real amazing thing. And so what you said about the river and the mountains and everything, but it's the people too, and mm-hmm. and their affinity for it. This place is like none other that I've ever been.
So Jim, while we're on that thought, I just wanted to slide this into our program. It's a local singer, songwriter from Smithers, and he's got a beautiful song about that river that you're talking about. And I kind of wanted to get it into your soul, so you're going to come on back. Have a listen to this.
Look at all these crazy fishermen, shoulder to shoulder along the banks. They take whatever they can, and nobody ever says thanks. It's my right, I was born here, it doesn't really work for me. Ain't nothing lasts forever, and that's pretty easy to see. In the big Skeena River,
in the big Skeena River,
it keeps on a rolling along. In the big Skeena River,
in the big Skeena River,
it's running strong. Now the hiders move their war canoes against a current to battle hill. Quiet through the water, ready for the kill. And crazy men chase gold and took paddle wheelers up here. Watch high hopes and big dreams fade and disappear. In the big Skeena River,
in the big Skeena River,
it keeps on moving along. In the big Skeena River,
in the big Skeena River,
it's running strong. The dentist runs his charter boat, foreign fishermen and cannery tours. They talk Sunnyside, Port Essington, and some exotic lures. He says we need to work together here and not dwell so much on the past. It's about the future of this river now. How are we gonna make it last? Or will our children curse us for leaving nothing behind? And if anyone hasn't noticed, this river brings life.
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 This river brings life. And the big Skeena River,
and the big Skeena River,
keeps on rolling along. And the big Skeena River,
and the big Skeena River,
is running strong. Hey, the big Skeena River,
and the big Skeena River,
keeps on rolling along. And the big Skeena River,
and the big Skeena River,
is running strong. This river brings
life. So I just wanted to slip in that song. I know there's no ukulele in there, but I was thinking that when Jim's back in Detroit and he takes a listen to the program, and it'll bring him back to the Big Skeena River. That's by Mark Perry, a local singer-songwriter from Smithers, B.C. And it's one of his go-to songs at the festivals that brings us all out into the open for a little bit of dancing. Okay, so we'll pick back up where we were on this recorded program and see how we can continue on the show.
It's a beautiful valley. We have life here too. I mean, we have our problems. We've got homeless people. We have, they call that road the Highway of Tears. We've had problems.
I saw that, a billboard of that.
Yeah. It's hard to understand, but we're part of the world. The world has problems, and we are always working on trying to improve them.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, one thing I wanted to ask you is, my brother is a drummer in L.A., and he lives sort of around Malibu Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And down the road, there's a guy, I can't remember his name, but he started a program called Playing for Change. Have you ever heard of that, Jim?
No, I haven't.
Well, if you get a chance, I want you to listen to it, because these guys started about 10 years ago, and they have got together. They started with a guy, a street musician. They liked what he was doing, and they decided to play together around the world. So they're hooked up computer-wise. They're all playing at the same time, and it is pretty phenomenal. And the money that they're making is going towards music schools.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole premise.
Right.
And what they're trying to say is, like, if you play music, you actually, you're not going to carry a gun. You got the guitars in the way.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You're thinking about love. You're thinking about, you know, a relationship. It's a different world. And I was just thinking about that with you, Jim. You know, when you're playing, like, you're connecting with these people in, it's not necessarily specifically a school, but it's a workshop.
Yeah.
And how you're talking about these people from Rupert, that's another thing. You have to make the drive to Rupert, from Terrace to Rupert, could be considered one of the most beautiful drives
I've heard
in
that,
the
yeah.
world. You know, I mean, you go wherever you go, you're going to see beautiful places, and they're all appreciated. And this one is a very similar setup there.
No, but I've been to a lot of beautiful places.
Yeah.
And I've been in the mountains. I've lived in a lot of beautiful places, Oregon coast. But when Alan, the first day, the second day I was here, and Alan and his friend Mike took me up to the lookout. What's the name
of
it? Malco Lookout.
Yeah.
And it was one of those days where the clouds are there, and then suddenly they're parting, and you're getting that sunshine, and the foliage is starting to change, and you've got the valley and the mountains, and the purples. I took this picture, and I put it on my Facebook. I'm like, look at this.
Yeah.
This is our lunch spot.
Yeah.
I mean, it's indescribable what it's like here. And from that day, from that lunch, was like, that's when it changed me, and I knew this was a different place.
That's pretty awesome, Jim. It really is. So at this moment, I just wanted to have a station recognition that we are coming to you on Smithers Community Radio, CICK, that's 93.9 on your FM dial. And this is Thomas Tom Roper, and I am presently interviewing Jim DeVille, ukulele player and instructor from Detroit, Michigan. And we also have our Smithers instructor, Alan Cormier, with us for this interview. So Jim, when we talk about just the type of decision that you made when you went to the ukulele and found out that you didn't need to have paper.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's happened now, I was at the last ukulele session I went to, I was actually in Niagara Falls, and they all had iPads, and I couldn't live without that. Like, I don't know, first of all, I don't know the words, and secondly, I don't know the notes, so I've got to follow along, and that's the only way I can play. Now, to go in your direction, how do you get someone who is stuck in paper to burn the sheet?
Oh, that's easy. Oh, we got to the softball questions? I'll tell you. The voice is the conduit to the musical mind. Never forget, the voice is the conduit to the musical mind. You can't think your way through a tune. You've got to hear it, you've got to hum it. And words don't matter either. It's the melody, harmony, and rhythm of songs that is the most important to get in your head. It must start in your head and then come through this little hole. And I used to say that all the time in workshops, until the first time I went to Australia, and I said that during the workshop. I pointed to my head and I said, the music starts here first, and then I pointed down and I pointed through the hole of the ukulele, and I said, and it comes out here. And after the workshop, an Australian guy came up to me and he said, hey, mate, just like that. That was my Australian accent.
Yeah.
Hey, mate. And I said, yeah. And he goes, you know, you were a little bit off on your what you said in the workshop there. And I said, well, you know, I'm always willing to learn. What was I wrong on? And he said, well, you know, that thing about the head coming through the hole here, you forgot to mention that it passes through your heart. Hmm. You know, that brought tears to my eye. And I've never forgotten that it must start in the head, but it has to have the heart. When it comes out the little hole, that's how it affects it when it's emotionally there.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a good example how you could start. Anybody can start to learn to play by ear. You start simple. You don't start with Thelonious Monk and Miles Davis.
Right.
You know, they already know the basics, and that's why they are off expanding the musical universe, their own musical universe. But when you start playing, you start with the key you're in. You pick a key. There are 12 keys. You can play. They're all the same. The pitch is just different. So you hum it. Now we're there. You know, we're in this key. And one chord, there are a lot of one chord songs that just hang in this key. You see how my voice matches the key. The next chord is usually this chord. It's just five notes up. And you play a two chord song and you hum it though. You go. Yeah. And there's got to be a groove to it too, you know. And then there's only one other major chord that comes out of the scale, and that's called the four chord. And it's a soft chord. Oh, you hear it? You hear the relationship from. Those three chords are the only three chords you need for country music. Because the great Harlan Howard, who wrote 4,000 three-chord country songs, he wrote songs like I Fall to Pieces for Patsy Cline, Pick Me Up on Your Way Down, Heartaches by the Number, Tiger by the Tail with Buck Owens. He wrote 4,000 of these. And people used to ask him, Harlan, what is it that makes a great country song? And he would say, it's three chords and the truth.
Right.
And the truth is that every note of the major scale is contained in those three chords. That means every emotion is contained within those three chords. And the one thing I discovered that blew me away is in country music, there are two emotions, right? She's either leaving right. or she's coming back.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
only two. And if you think about it, in life, there are basically two emotions.
Yeah.
You know, your partner is leaving you or he or she is coming back.
Yeah.
You know? So in country music, if I know that and I know a song like Crying Time from Buck Owens, well, I know right off the bat it's going to the five chord because it's crying time. It's crying time again. You're gonna leave me. Told you, she's leaving on that chord.
Yeah.
I can see that. I can see that far away. Look, here we're back home in your eye. I can tell by the way you hold me, darling. She might come back. Oh, my God. Hear that. Oh, hear the emotion of that chord. Oh, darling, don't leave me. Oh, please. Then it won't be long before. That's crying time. Crying time. So, see, that's what cracked the egg for me is
right.
realizing that every one of these chords that come out of the major scale has an emotion associated, and if you pay attention to the lyrics, you'll be able to logically find your way through a tune.
Yeah.
That sounds very, very interesting, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow too, Jim.
Right.
And I did take a session with you in Sorrento about the similar running
right.
without sheet music, but it actually didn't really catch.
Well, the thing is, and like I said, I've been doing this for a long time, and I have seen people, you know, come to my workshop 2, 3, 4 times because you don't get it in a long weekend, you know? You
no.
don't.
Yeah.
You know, if you want it, you keep practicing, but you practice the chord progressions. You don't practice one song after another, after another, after another, and treat them as isolated incidents. You treat the patterns of emotion, and that's how you get into the feeling of it. So when you hear something, you go, oh, I know what that chord is because I'm crying.
Right.
You know, that's yeah. that's the whole thing.
That sounds excellent, Jim. So
Could you and Jim, or could, pardon me, you and Alan put together another song for us?
And not after the way he performed on the first one. I'm going to have to...
Can I come on?
You can accompany me over this time.
No, of course we can. And I'll tell you, this is the unique thing about the ukulele, too, for people unfamiliar with this instrument. It's a four-stringed instrument, and people think that it's a Hawaiian instrument, mm-hmm. but it's not a Hawaiian instrument. It's of Portuguese origin. Portuguese, from the island of Madeira, which is just off the coast, they had a couple of small stringed instruments like the ukulele, and they were called the rajó and the braguinha. And in 1879, Portuguese immigrants from Madeira boarded a ship and went to Hawaii to help work in the taro fields. They needed labor.
Right.
They brought with them the rajó and the braguinha, and some carpenters on board the ship. And when they got there, these carpenters, well, they had some koa trees on the island. They made a similar instrument to the braguinha and the rajó, and tuned slightly different, and called it a ukulele. The locals, because when they played it, the left hand, they looked like dancing fleas. The left hand was just playing all these quick notes. And so ukulele, translates to jumping flea.
Okay.
So that's where that comes from.
Right.
But the great thing about this instrument is it's tuned in a reentrant fashion, which means, Alan, just play the strings of a guitar from the top to the bottom. Like
top,
one at a time.
Top pitch or top?
Lowest pitch. Hear how all the pitches are ascending, right, from low to high. The ukulele doesn't do that. The ukulele goes high, low, high, high. So it's called reentrant tuning. That's what gives it
the sparkle.
Yeah. And it's tuned to an open chord, too. If Alan strummed the guitar, no, don't play a chord, just strum it open. See how,
that's
not a chord. But the ukulele strummed open is a chord.
Yeah.
So what we're going to play here is a tune called the Spanish Fandango. And the arrangement is from Ernest Ka'ai, who was a famous Hawaiian composer at the turn of the 19th to 20th century, and wrote beautiful melodies. And this style of playing the ukulele is called the campanella style. And campanella in Italian means little bells. And what that really translates to, technically, is the top three strings on the ukulele I'm going to be playing in like a forward roll style, like this. And letting the harmony of the chord ring, while on the top string, I'm going to be playing melody. So you're going to be hearing the melody on the first string, and then harmonies coming through the other strings in this style. And it just sounds, it's just beautiful. And I always, when people ask me, Jim, I am not familiar with the ukulele. Could you play me something? I always play this tune because it just shows, it highlights the beauty of this instrument and the melody and harmony that can come through it. And accompanied with a guitar, it's really nice. So we'll play the Spanish Fandango here. ready, Alan?
I think so. See what I can do this time.
We'll go... Thank you.
was just beautiful, just completely beautiful. And you would think the average person that was listening to a ukulele, they would not understand the quality that can come out of that small instrument.
No, no. And the way that, this is the third wave of popularity of this instrument. In 1915 was the first time it was introduced in the mainland when at the San Francisco Pan-Pacific Exposition. That's the first time the Hawaiian had brought it to this country, and it gained great popularity all through the 20s of the jazz age. It fell off until the 50s when Arthur Godfrey, an American TV and radio presenter, played the baritone ukulele and was representing the McAfee Plastic Ukulele Company, where they made plastic. He sold 9 million plastic ukes in the 50s because of his stretch in radio and television, a new medium, television. And that fell off by the 70s, but in the 90s, there was a resurgence in it because of the big Hawaiian guy that recorded the Somewhere Over the Rainbow and What a Wonderful World medley. And then Jake Shimabukuro, great Hawaiian player, came along. And then great instrument makers started making high-quality ukuleles, like they would make high-quality guitars. And like this tenor ukulele that I'm playing is an Ernest Instruments tenor, and it's probably a $3,000 instrument. Mm-hmm. So it's not a toy. No. It's not a little guitar.
No, exactly.
It's a very beautiful. Nice, mutable instrument.
Yeah. Very much so. Very much so. Well, Jim, we're kind of closing out on time. It's been a real pleasure talking ukulele with you and Alan. And you guys have showed us the quality that we can put forth with the music that you've made for us. What I wanted to say, Jim, and I've actually heard it, is that I'm kind of hoping you're coming back to the Valley.
Oh, yeah. I'll be back here in June of 2025.
Because there are one other thing besides the world of ukulele. There's the river to float. There's the mountain to climb. There's a lot to offer in this area that will kind of inspire the ukulele playing. And that's the beautiful thing about it is my entire life is spent here, but there's still places I've never been. So you're always able to come back and see something new enjoy it. So there you have it, folks. That's the conclusion to my bi-monthly program, On the Ropes, broadcasting from Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 on your FM dial. And just a reminder, if you're not on board listening live, we are completely archived. And you can pick up the show on smithersradio.com on your computer at your convenience.
And if I could...
Jim, just before we close it right down on our program, I wanted to put one more song on, Jim. This is the... song from the band that you were a part of, the Caravan Go, and they've got this real nice little blues song from the old country that you were living in at one time, the Columbia River. So we'll just give this a little mix. Thank you. Thanks for that, Jim. That's just showing us how we can get on there. Oh, we slipped in a little extra there. So we'll just finish up our recorded program. And Jim's got his address for us to that we can send out if we were looking for more information.
I'd add one other thing. If people want to find out more about the instrument or more about me, they can go to www.playukuleleByear.com.
I appreciate you putting that in there, Jim. It's very important that we know how to get hold of you. And also to remind others that tomorrow is workshop time and there's always room for another ukulele player.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Thomas. Sure appreciate it. Great to see you again.
And thanks for listening, and we'll see you all on the flip side.